From Springfield, this is State Week, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
What I can tell you is I'm not engaging in any hypotheticals. You can see that I'm all in for Joe Biden. Joe Biden's going to be the nominee of the Democratic Party. I'm going to go out there and wholeheartedly campaign for him.
Governor J.B. Pritzker, he was asked about what's on many people's minds right now when it comes to the presidential race, and that is the status of Joe Biden as the Democratic nominee. We'll discuss that and more coming up here on State Week. Our panel includes Charlie Wheeler, professor emeritus and former director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at the University of Illinois Springfield. Charlie's also been a longtime State House reporter and observer. And our guest this week is Rick Pearson, the chief political reporter for the Chicago Tribune. Rick, it's always good to have you back with us.
Thanks for inviting me, Sean.
So what a difference a couple of weeks make. President Biden was eyeing Chicago in August, where he'd accept his party's nomination. Instead, there's been a firestorm igniting around him on whether he's capable of being president, and this is due to that disastrous debate performance. So I wanted to ask you, Rick, as we sit here, and I want to make sure people understand, we are recording this show a little bit early, about midweek, due to some scheduling issues. So as we sit here at this point, there seems to be a real divide in the party. Is Joe Biden in some trouble here?
I think within the party, certainly. But when you listen to Joe Biden, he's defiantly basically saying, bring it on. I'm the nominee. I'm the incumbent president. I expect to beat Donald Trump in November. And I'm the only one that can do that. And as long as Biden maintains that posture, and every day that goes by goes basically as a win for him, that he is able to withstand some of the inter-party criticism. And you, other than some notable exceptions, most notably Nancy Pelosi saying he ought to maybe rethink this, you're not seeing a groundswell that I think a lot of people expected this week when Congress returned to Washington. You're not seeing that groundswell of urging Biden to step down. He's been working, obviously, various core constituencies in the Democratic Party, has the backing of the Congressional Black Caucus, has the backing of the Congressional Hispanic Caucus. The Congressional Democratic leadership is sticking with him. But beneath the surface of all that, there is evident tension here among Democrats who fear that no matter what Joe Biden does moving forward here, that disastrous debate performance is in the eyes and minds of voters, and that does not spell well for victory in November.
Now, Charlie, what do you think right now? Because Joe Biden, I keep hearing a lot of people going back to Lyndon Johnson, when Lyndon Johnson decided not to run for another term. But this one seems a little different. There was no doubt Lyndon Johnson, I think, could have performed if he was reelected. This is a completely different situation, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And in this case, Kamala Harris is already the vice president. So the folks who want somebody other than Joe Biden, I think the only possible choice that would make sense would be the vice president. And whether or not that's going to happen, I don't know. It's got to be up to President Biden himself. And I think the appeal that people are making to him, like Speaker Pelosi, is that, look, you've had a very laudable career. You've done wonderful things. Your administration has been great for the country. But you know, you're at an age where you're kind of losing a step, where you're not quite as sharp as you used to be. And for the good of the country, you need to kind of sacrifice yourself and say that for the greater good, as Democrats would express it, to be sure that we can keep Donald Trump out of the White House. And that would have to be, I think, the approach that would have to be taken. Whether or not Joe Biden will accept that. He's been a scrapper and a fighter all his life, and it would be difficult, I think, for him to acknowledge, yeah, maybe it's time for me to let someone younger, more vigorous, where these questions about age are not a problem.
Well, we like on this show to talk about Illinois government and politics. And really, the reason this is playing in such a big role here in Illinois, too, is because not only is it a pretty heavily blue state, a lot of people are interested in what's happening, but also we have the Democratic National Convention scheduled for Chicago in August. Rick, at this point, is there a way, if Joe Biden decided he was not going to step down, and I'm not sure Democrats would try to force this issue, but is there something that could happen at the convention, the idea of the brokered convention? Is that still possible?
It's possible, but it's very unlikely because it would require massive rules changes. You've basically got Biden right now has pledged to him 3,900 delegates. I mean, those are pledged to him. That's according to the rules, and that's how it would play out. You would have to have the Democratic National Committee basically rewrite the rules to remove that pledge, the pledge delegate rules in effect, and that would just be a massive undertaking. So it's really, this is Joe Biden's decision. And it really falls on him to decide, you know, can you bring this party success not only in defeating Donald Trump, but also in the down ballot races that are very important for control of the House and Senate.
Well, speaking of the DNC, does it create problems, this uncertainty? And I know we're still, you know, 6 weeks or more out from the convention happening, but, you know, these are very scripted events and they want to put on the best front they can whenever we're holding these for the TV audience and others. But is it creating any problems behind the scenes, do you think, at the convention just for the planning purposes right now?
Oh, I think so. I mean, as you say, this is always very tightly scripted. And basically, as we all know, these conventions have become nothing more than really partisan promotional TV shows. So I think when it comes to what the programming is, and, you know, yes, we can still say there is some uncertainty here about, you know, if will Biden last out some of these naysayers. But assuming that's the case, that programming has to shift into an even higher gear, not just doing what they had planned to do, which was to promote his successes in office and what he would do in the next 4 years, into almost programming to show that he's competent and that age is not an issue, that he can lead the country for 4 more years. And I think that requires some definite tweaking of the programming rather than the expectation that this was going to be a kumbaya moment for all of these Democratic delegates who were going to meet in person for the first time after COVID kind of shut down conventions 4 years ago.
If I'm not mistaken, isn't the current plan for the Democratic delegates to meet virtually to formally nominate Joe Biden before the convention because of some difficulty in getting a candidate on the ballot in Ohio?
Yeah, Ohio has an August 7th rule for appearing on the ballot. So yes, the game plan was for the DNC to meet virtually and to have Biden formally placed in nomination. Now, there's also this school of thought, too, that Ohio has seemed to have gone reliably into the Republican ranks in presidential races. And while it might be embarrassing not to have the presidential candidate of the Democratic Party not appear on the Ohio ticket, are you really giving up anything here that you were going to gain? Mm-hmm. Now, obviously, that could affect down ballot races, and there's big ramifications there. So, yes, there's still this kind of August 7th deadline for Ohio, but people seem to be, the Democrats in the chatter room seem to be overlooking that.
Well, Charlie, do you think then, I mean, August 7th still seems like a ways off, do you think that there is a deadline pretty much for Biden to decide? Because I would think Democrats want to coalesce around whoever the nominee is going to be, And if that is Joe Biden, then they want to say, let's make this clear. Let's get this done and get going. Or if he's not going to be the nominee, maybe they decide, you know, let's get going now so Kamala Harris can, or whoever it is, can get their name out there a little bit more. So do you think there's a window here that he has, maybe through the weekend, maybe into next week through the Republican convention? Do you think there's a period here that he has to make a decision, or is it just going to drag like this for a while?
I would say there's a window, but the window is closing, and every day that this uncertainty remains, as Rick suggested, it messes up planning for the convention. It makes it more difficult to, if there is going to be a replacement, to shift everything and focus on the new person, on Vice President Harris, if that's who it's going to be. And in another sense, every day that Joe Biden stays in the race makes it more likely that he will continue to do so. Ideally, one would say perhaps Joe Biden, after his performance in the debate, should sit back and say, well, I'm not the guy I was 20 years ago, and maybe for the good of country and the party, maybe I should gracefully bow out. I'm not privy, obviously, to his thoughts or an insider. I'm somebody who tries to keep track of what's going on in Springfield, and I usually have no clue more than anybody else about what's going on in Washington.
Well, Rick, what do you think as far as a window goes? Is he being given just a little bit of time here? Of course, there's a lot going on in Washington this week.
Well, I think it's a matter for Team Biden to play out the clock here and basically play out the calendar here. And so, yes, there's a lot going on in Washington this week with the NATO summit, and that would not be a opportune time to start creating turmoil over the future presidency of the United States. So, I mean, some people had looked at this week as kind of a potential deadline. But again, given the lack of a cohesive group of Democrats willing to step forward and put their names on the list saying, you really need to step down, given that lack of kind of a snowball effect in Washington, all it becomes is just chatter. Certainly concern, but it's just chatter and doesn't affect the final calculus.
Well, before we move on, I guess I have to ask, Rick, what do you think of J.B. Pritzker's response to all of this? He seems to have been a very good, loyal soldier to Joe Biden and has said all the right things this week that you would expect that type of person to say, the loyal soldier. But there's no doubt he has his eyes set on possibly making a White House run at some point, maybe not this time, but at some point. Your take on what he has said so far?
Well, I found it very interesting. So July 3rd was the meeting that Biden had called with the more than 20 Democratic governors, both in person and virtually at the White House. And Pritzker went to the White House and attended that. And it was after the meeting, his campaign issued kind of a bland statement about, you know, there was a, you know, candid talks and that Pritzker appreciated hearing from the president directly. And I contrasted that with, you looked on social media and you've got Gretchen Whitmer, the governor of Michigan, and Gavin Newsom, the governor of California, both being mentioned as future presidential candidates or possible Biden replacements, who were effusive in their praise of Biden's appearance before the governors. And that contrasts that with what Pritzker did, which I think led to some speculation here that Pritzker was kind of holding his powder dry. So you had on Tuesday Pritzker's first appearance since that meeting in public, and that's where he offered this effusive praise of Biden and that he was a loyal soldier standing by Biden. I think that's why there was all this attention placed on Pritzker on Tuesday, was because he hadn't, you know, there was just questions that I think in a lot of people's minds about, is he just waiting to see what's developing here? But obviously he's a surrogate. He's going this weekend to Ohio and Indiana to address Democrats there to tout the Biden record. So, I think he even said, I don't see a brokered convention. That ain't going to happen. Joe Biden's the nominee.
Yeah, Charlie, you think that Biden, he has to walk carefully here, but he's saying the right things for the Democratic Party?
Yeah, I think one piece of advice that Governor Pritzker had for the president, which I thought was accurate but also telling, was when he said that, okay, here's his quote. I think that obviously the president had a bad performance at a debate. That doesn't help anybody. He knows that. And what you have to do is stand up and say, I didn't do it well, which I think he said, and prove people wrong about what they want to say about him. And he's doing that. He's got to get out there and answer all the questions to show people that he is the leader of the free world. So it's kind of a message. Look, if you are capable and competent and can handle the job, you got to get out there and prove it to people by participating in news events, by meeting with reporters, by being able to speak extemporaneously, and kind of put to rest the notion that, well, he's too old. And I have to say, in a moment of candor, I am actually older than Joe Biden.
You've got my vote, Charlie.
Yeah, but I'm not running for president.
I'll write you in.
Well, we have some time left here. Let's also turn our attention to next week, because just over the border from Illinois, the Republican National Convention will take place in Milwaukee. Rick, this is pretty much a done deal, of course, for Donald Trump to get the nomination. Is there any drama left with this, except for the fact that they may not exactly know who they're running against?
Well, certainly we're waiting to see who he picks for a vice presidential candidate. And in a recent appearance in Florida, he was kind of taunting the name of Marco Rubio, who at one time as a political opponent was Little Marco. The choice has been kind of telegraphed that it would be made on the first day of the convention on Monday by the Trump campaign. But, you know, we'll see what happens. We all remember that every week was infrastructure week under the Trump campaign. Trump presidency. So, I mean, there is some questions there about, you know, who does he pick and what does that candidate bring to the table for Team Trump, as well as for swaying persuadable voters to vote for Trump. But beyond that, you know, this thing is already set. All of the delegates are committed to Trump. Parties, Illinois didn't have to, but other state parties changed their rules to require a binding vote, basically, for Trump. So it will just be interesting to see what kind of display that Team Trump tries to put on. And is it full-throated MAGA, or is it going to be kind of in a reduced state to try to persuade persuadable voters that Trump deserves another term?
And of course, we watch the Illinois delegation a lot, but one issue with the Illinois Republican Party is Don Tracy has been for the last few years the Republican Party chair. He issued a pretty damning statement about where things stand within the party. He wasn't happy with a lot of the infighting and things going on, and decided that he will not be will continue in that role. In fact, I believe maybe by the time people hear this show, they will have a replacement already. But does that create problems for Republicans? They're not going to win in the presidential race in Illinois. That's pretty evident. I think they know that. But does it create other problems for Republicans here in Illinois going forward?
Well, it's been basically a disastrous 7 weeks for the state Republican Party since they held their state Republican convention down in Collinsville on May 25th, there were evidence of disgruntlement of the leadership of the party in a couple of instances at the convention, which eventually led to the state Republican State Central Committee forcing the vice chair, Mark Shaw from Lake Forest, to drop him as a party, drop his title, as well as membership in the GOP fundraising committee over some of the antics he displayed in trying to leverage votes to become the next Republican National Committeeman from Illinois. And ultimately, he lost on some very rare votes from the floor. That kind of presaged the bigger questions about the leadership of the entire state Republican Party under Don Tracy over these last 3 years, which led to Tracy issuing this letter of resignation, saying he's spending more time trying to cope with these factions of fighting within the Republican Party than trying to work on how Republicans can get those persuadable votes to vote Republican instead of Democratic. And you really have a party that's teetering on, if not irrelevant, in a one-party state. Their money is virtually dried up, and their future is not bright. And the person who becomes the next state party chairman just inherits this great big mess. And even if there's dissension among Democrats about Joe Biden, it's still going to be hard for that to translate to maybe Republican victories in down ballot races in Illinois.
All right. Well, let me save a couple of minutes here. Charlie, I'm going to go to you on this. The fiscal year came to an end, and we always like to take a closer look at where Illinois stands with its finances. And what did your takeaway from this, Charlie, as far as the end of last fiscal year and where we're headed?
Well, we're still kind of chugging along, not as well as we might. According to the Commission on Government Forecasting and Accountability, which is the fiscal guru for the General Assembly, we finished the year with the base general funds, which is the main workhorse of state government, with a gain of about $1 billion without making adjustments for the fact that we're not getting any federal ARPA the way we did last fiscal year. So that's a good sign. But at the same time, on a number of important metrics, we're not doing that well. And Benjamin Varner, who is the chief economist for COGFA, in the report from the commission said that the Illinois economy over the last decade has generally grown at a slower rate than the national average and compared to other states. And Illinois remains one of the slower growing states. He pointed out in his opinion that we've had a reputation for poor fiscal health over the decades. The lowest part was the two-year budget impasse we had in 2016 and 2017. We also have a high level of unfunded pension obligations, but he said the situation has been improving. The state no longer has a backlog of bills. The rainy day fund has a record amount of money, and at one point it was down to roughly what I have in my checking account. And we've also approved various tax incentives to get new business projects. So we're on the way up. And his overall conclusion was that Illinois' economic and financial position has improved in recent years, but it still lags behind other states and the country as a whole. And there's also, it was reported that we've got almost $5 billion in cash on hand in terms of what's in the accounts. But it should be noted that number will be reduced because there are still outstanding bills. Now, we're current on paying the bills we have, and the comptroller pointed that out, that there's no longer any backlog, but there are still bills for expenses that were incurred before June 30th where the bills are still coming in. It's like if you have a credit card, you put money on the credit card, and every month you get a statement, but it's not due until after the end of the month. So we're in that same position. We have commitments that will have to be made during what's called the lapse period, which is July and August, to cover expenses that were incurred under the prior budget, but the actual invoices haven't been received yet.
Let me move on to our notes from the field, and Rick, we'll go to you first.
With the Republican National Convention coming up in Milwaukee, the Illinois delegation there, the 64-member delegation, is being led by Congresswoman Mary Miller from Southern Illinois. She's one of the staunch far-right members of Congress, a member of the House Freedom Caucus, an ally of Marjorie Taylor Greene. And one of the things that I'd be looking for is, in leading the delegation, you get some media attention here. And she has always been averse to speaking to reporters. So this will be interesting to see how she handles media and media attention in a different level than what she's used to from her home in Southern Illinois.
Another note from the field, the former Republican State Senator Sam McCann, a one-time third-party candidate for governor, was sentenced this week to 3.5 years in federal prison. He'd pleaded guilty to wire fraud, money laundering, and tax evasion for stealing campaign funds and filing false reports. He was also ordered to pay more than $680,000 in restitution to two unions that backed his campaigns. And Charlie.
The U.S. Supreme Court ruled a bit ago that the bribery statute only counts for bribes that are paid ahead of time and not for so-called gratuities, which would be gifts and favors that an official would get after the fact. And it had to deal with a case out of Indiana where a mayor gave a trucking contract and then shortly thereafter got hired as a consultant for the truckers. The repercussions here in Illinois, the prosecution and the defense in the case of ex-Speaker Michael Madigan on Monday told a judge that they want to keep his case on track for a trial on October 8. The feds said they have no plan to file a revised indictment because most of the counts against Madigan aren't dependent upon the statute that the Supreme Court invalidated. And the next thing to look for in that case is that Madigan's attorneys are going to have until July 18 to file motions related to the Snyder ruling, and they're next due in court on July 16th. And in another case also affected by the U.S. Supreme Court ruling, the four people who are convicted in 2023 in the so-called ComEd case are also challenging their convictions under the terms of that Supreme Court opinion. And the prosecution, U.S. attorney said that they don't believe a new trial is necessary for the ComEd four because they were convicted on counts that weren't affected by the Supreme Court's ruling. But one of the attorneys for one of the defendants said that they are going to seek acquittal. So they have until August 27th to file their motions, and a briefing on the motions has to occur by November 14th. So under the timeline being laid out in the case of the ComEd 4, they could still face serious prison time, but it's not likely that they will be sentenced this year. It'll probably be sometime in 2025 if in fact they are convicted again.
That's all the time we have for this episode of State Week. Our panel included Charlie Wheeler and Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune. Look for State Week where you get your podcasts, through the NPR app and at nprillinois.org. I'm Sean Crawford. Join us next time.
You've been listening to State Week, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week is produced in the state capital by public radio station NPR Illinois. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.